Welcome to the Sweep Podcast with me, Mitchell Willis, and him, Michael Hall.
Hello, I'm surprised you remembered the introduction there, Mitch.
It's taken me a while to remember how to set up and get into the swing of things, but I'm there, and yeah, it's been a long time, hasn't it? How are you doing?
It has. I'm good, thank you. Yeah, it's not like we've not seen each other in I don't even know when the last pod was that we released, probably about a month ago.
Yeah,
like
it was. Life's kind of got in the way, and I'll take most of the blame for that, for moving house.
Well, yeah. But, I don't think that you should apportion blame. I think you've basically just been saving up a decent amount of football knowledge in the weeks that we've not been recording, so I look forward to more insight than ever today.
Yeah, absolutely. Since we last recorded, English football has gone mad.
It's just become really good, hasn't it?
It's bonkers. We've had the best title race in years, possibly ever, even more on that after. All English European finals, football in powerhouse crumbling at its foundations, predictable relegations, we'd say. Managerial sackings as well, and the FA Cup final to look forward to this weekend, and some exhilarating Championship playoff action, and definitely more on that later. There's a little bit of excitement in my voice. Also got a trip to Portugal, and we've also got a summer tournament again, and realistically it's one that England are going to win.
Do you reckon we are going to win it?
Yeah, well, probably not, but it's coming home.
Possibly
coming home. But first of all, congratulations, Manchester City, Premier League champions.
Absolutely, yeah. There was a little bit of a scare, wasn't there, in the game against Brighton. I think there was a few murmuring hearts down on the south coast when Brighton went 1-0 up.
Did anyone believe?
And Liverpool were winning at the same time, obviously. Personally, I didn't. I was just very expecting that Manchester City were going to get back into it. Not necessarily as quickly as they did, because they hit back pretty much straight from kickoff, but the performance itself will please Guardiola. I think that they played with a bit of freedom when they got ahead, and you could see the team that we'd seen for the majority of the first sort of 6 or 7 months of the season, rather than the team who tried to shut down games in recent weeks when going ahead. And I think that they finished in the style that you would expect from a champion. Well, a team who have just won the Premier League, and they were nervy early on, and I think that they'd probably got a lot of those nerves from the game against Leicester. And I know that we're going to mention that game, because the goal from Vincent Kompany was out of this world for somebody of his
goal of the season.
Not for me. No, for me, Andreas Townsend's goal at Manchester City for me was still the best goal of the season, and people I've heard talking about the Kompany one and saying that it has to be goal of the season because of how much it meant, and I don't buy that. I think
it should be based on technical ability.
Yeah, and the quality of the goal, because you could play for a team like Derby when they got relegated with 11 points, and you could score an absolute worldie, but because it's not meant anything, should that therefore be discounted? And I don't think so. Anyway, I'm going miles off track here. I think that what City have done this season to finish with the points total that they've done, with Liverpool ahead of them for a lot of the season, and then basically being at their heels for the last couple of months, is pretty incredible. And I'm not sure that we will see anything like it in the next 10-15 years, and unless Guardiola decides to stay for a good amount of that time.
Does it make it more impressive this season, given the challenge? Obviously finished with less points, just about. But, you know, last year I think they were about 20 points ahead at the end of the season. This time it's been sustained from the very, very last game.
Yeah, I think it's a different approach, and that comes down to the way that you're able to go about football matches in the last third of the season. I think it was 14 league games that they won in a row, and obviously Liverpool did the same, but Manchester City had to do that because once they got ahead, they were aware that at any point they could be overtaken. And I don't know if it's more impressive. I think time will probably tell on that one, and it may be that next season they do it again, and does that become more impressive? I think it's hard to look at seasons individually unless they've broken records, but obviously they've not done that in this season. But it will probably go down as one that meant a huge amount to them because of the fact that Liverpool were so good for the whole season.
Guardiola said it's, you know, it's his toughest season. It's probably the most impressive win, I guess, from that perspective as well. And, you know, we'll talk about Liverpool shortly, but I'm intrigued to get your opinion on whether it's a successful season for Manchester City. They've obviously, you know, two trophies in the bag, possibly another one this weekend as well. Is it a disappointment without the Champions League, or is it, you know, they have to look at it on face value and appreciate what they've got? Because I think if you ask any Liverpool and Manchester City fans, a lot of them would switch it round. You know, Manchester City would like the Champions League, Liverpool would have liked the league. And I wonder if it is deemed a slight disappointment at all, or are we just so used to seeing Manchester City winning now that it's kind of foregone conclusion, so it does take the gloss off it a little bit?
I think it's a tough one. I think there will be Manchester City fans out there who will see it as a disappointment because they've not reached their goals, and Guardiola was brought in to make them European champions.
And it's so arguably the best season to do that as well, given the, you know, certainly looking at the semi-final lineups, there possibly wasn't a better chance.
No, absolutely not. And they probably won't have a worse sort of run in the Champions League. The fact that they sort of struggled through the group stage, lost games that we didn't expect them to lose, and didn't look overly convincing in some games as well, that they could have put that right. And you look at the fact that Tottenham have made it, and obviously they had a really similar group stage. In fact, they were even worse than Manchester City for the majority of that, and just sort of squeaked through in the last game week. And I think City fans have to be realistic and realise that sort of 20 years ago they were playing in the third division of English football, and if anyone had offered you and I think if anyone had offered you the opportunity to win, I think it's 3 Premier League titles in about 5 years, so if somebody had offered you that 20 years ago, you absolutely would have taken it, and that's where a little bit of perspective is needed. If they win the FA Cup on Saturday, then they will be the first men's team to do the domestic treble in England, which in modern day football is a pretty incredible stat when you consider how dominant we've had teams in the past. And it's a really interesting one. I personally think it's a great achievement and they shouldn't see it as a disappointment, but on the other hand I can understand why some of the fans may have that viewpoint.
And you know, they averaged 92 points over the 3 seasons that Pep's been there, and that's including when they finished third as well, which is phenomenal, really. I think if they were anywhere near that next season, then yeah, it would be a fantastic achievement. But Liverpool, on the other hand, you know, they are they have impressed a lot this season. They're impressive this weekend as well. It was a relentless performance, and you know, we've seen that all season. And this wasn't an easy game. On paper, I personally was expecting potentially a slip up here, because Wolves have done very well against the big teams, home and away this year. And I think, you know, you look at someone like Sadio Mane, he's just stepped up this season, and it was almost a foregone conclusion that actually, as soon as they get their foot into the game, that it was going to be an inevitable victory for them.
Yeah, and I think the difference between playing a Wolves side who still had something to play for versus a Wolves side who confirmed 7th place the week before, it's probably the difference in this match. And actually knowing that you don't have to go into the last game and get something to try and secure your place in Europe, and I know that's assuming that Watford don't win the cup on Saturday, but I think most people would make that assumption. So I think that although the squad that Nuno put out was a strong one, and the players that he put on that pitch were as good as they've been for the majority of the season, I think that you probably lose a little bit of that competitive edge when you know that there's absolutely nothing to play for. Nobody could overtake them on the final day, and to finish in seventh for a newly promoted team is fantastic, but it probably wasn't the challenge that Klopp might have expected a couple of weeks beforehand.
Yeah, I think if we look at Liverpool over the season, you know, I've just said about Mane stepping up. Salah, great without reaching the same heights as last year, but I think it's difficult to overlook how good he's been. The fullbacks are on another level. They're fantastic. Obviously, Alexander-Arnold's got the most assists for a defender in a season. This is his second season, kind of one and a half.
Yeah,
season,
I was
really
going to say his first full season.
He's been fantastic, and Andy Robertson is possibly the best left back in the world at the moment, I'd say. I think it's probably difficult to look much further past that. And obviously Virgil van Dijk as well, he rightly player of the year for me. I don't know if there's any doubts for you.
It's a tough one because you look at the attributes that him and Raheem Sterling have got, and I think it's fair to say that those two have been the standouts this season. I think that Sterling probably tailed off a little bit towards the end of the season, but that might be to be expected given how far he went in the World Cup. Obviously Virgil van Dijk wasn't at the last World Cup, so he had a full summer off
to prepare.
He had a lot
of time off last year as well, didn't he?
He did indeed. So when you consider the amount of games that Liverpool have had to play and the performance level that he's established throughout the season, it is pretty incredible. And I don't think that there is a better defender in world football at the moment. I think Sterling probably could have chipped in with another 5 or 6 goals, maybe a few more assists here and there. But like I say, when you get towards the end of the season, it's all about preserving those leads, and that's maybe where he wasn't let off the leash as much as he was in the earlier months of the season.
Third highest ever points total in the Premier League. Would have won any season other than this one and the last. And interestingly, 4 of the 5 teams that lost out on the title by a single point have gone on to win the title the following season. It's just Arsenal in 98-99 didn't, and they finished second. Is that an omen, or are we fully anticipating that Manchester City will just blow everyone out of the water?
I don't think they will. I think that the difficulty is that Liverpool have reined them in now, and it will be hard for the Liverpool board not to back Klopp in the summer. I think if he goes to them and says, I want these two players and they're going to cost this amount of money, they have to give
them
to him.
Where do they strengthen?
It's a really difficult one because that defensively they've looked great this season, but only in 3 out of the 4 positions. Joel Matip's come in and done okay towards the end of the season, but I still think they lack a really quality second centre-half, somebody to play alongside Van Dijk. I know that Joe Gomez did well earlier in the season, but then got injured, and it may be that they want to strengthen in that area. Naby Keita's not really worked out for them, so maybe they'll decide to go into the market in that position. And then Firmino has been a really integral part of that front three, but you would argue that he's probably not contributed as much as the other two, and he's been playing the furthest forward. So I don't think they'll split those three up. I think that they will be the front three attacking options for Liverpool next season. I think that Henderson and Milner have performed adequately when called upon, but I do feel that they're missing that really world-class pivot in the middle.
Yep.
And if they're able to bring that in, then it may take them to the next level. What about you?
Similar, really. It's very difficult. I mean, you could be hypercritical of certain things that are not really the norm. So, you know, someone like Jordan Henderson, he plays a kind of 7 out of 10 every single game, and you know, if you want to take it to the next level, you need the 8 or 9 out of 10. It's rare that he does reach those peaks, but he rarely goes below. Same with James Milner as well. So it depends whether you want that consistency or whether you want to potentially take that risk as well. And I'm not sure off the top of my head there's necessarily that player already in the Premier League as well, so you possibly take the risk as you did with someone like Naby Keita, who comes in from abroad, and you know, it may well be that he's had his bedding in season and next season he comes good as well. That said, you look at someone like Fabinho, who has grown into the season. I think towards the end of the season he's been fantastic, particularly in the European games. Wijnaldum has surprised me this year as well. I didn't necessarily expect him to reach the levels that he's reached, and I think the difficulty with the Liverpool midfield, there's kind of three positions that all play fairly similar types of play. You know, the fullbacks get forward, so there's quite a lot of defending to do. So actually, if you look at it on balance, someone like Henderson or Milner is a really good option for them. But I understand what you're saying. You know, ultimately, if they want to push on, they potentially have to do something. Same in the centre-half as well. I don't think they will reach this level of points again, perhaps. That said, I think, you know, they'll be there or thereabouts next year as well.
Absolutely right. I think we're going to look at some of the key moments, aren't we, which have had a real impact on the title race this season, because there's been quite a few, and a lot of people have talked about the small margins that have had a big impact on both sides. So if we kick things off, the first time that Liverpool and Manchester City played each other, which was at Anfield in October, and that last minute penalty that Riyad Mahrez stepped up, and he looked nervous, didn't he, and he obviously smashed it straight over the bar. And
affected him for the rest of the season?
I think it affected Pep more than anything, because I think he would expect anyone who's going to step up and take that penalty to score, and to not even trouble the keeper at that stage is pivotal, because they'd both started really well. Both Liverpool and City were flying, and to then not have the ability to take those 3 points when they probably deserved it on balance and play would have been hard for Guardiola to take, knowing the fact that he's such a perfectionist. And at that point they were level on points, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And then obviously you go into December and it changes, the balance changes towards Liverpool. City lost to Chelsea, Palace, and then to Leicester, and you know, 3 losses in 4 is massive. You just don't see that from a Manchester City now and B, a Pep Guardiola side. But at that point they actually went into third, and that was, we thought Spurs might be in the title race, which, looking back now, seems absolutely daft, doesn't it?
It does, but at that time, all these teams were doing well, and City were faltering, and like you say, you just don't ever imagine that they would lose three games, and especially to the opposition as well. I mean, Chelsea, you can understand it. It was obviously a tight 1-0 one, I think, and but then to concede three goals at home to Palace, and also Leicester gave them a little bit of a footballing lesson that day. It was a strange one.
And that's at the same time you've got Liverpool beating Arsenal 5-1 in their last game of the year, and then it gets to January, the first game of the year for both of them. You've got Manchester City 2, Liverpool 1, and it's Liverpool's only defeat of the season, but it was crucial. You know, we look at the end of the season, it really was crucial, and you know, had Liverpool won, they'd have opened up a gap of 10 points instead, reduced to 4 points, and I think, you know, that possibly was a turning point. Obviously, Manchester City are very much back in it then, but that game, I remember it, and I remember us talking about it as well, it was enthralling. You know, the quality, the pace was phenomenal, and obviously this is where John Stones makes his goal line clearance. We've seen it talked about a lot over the last week or so, where the ball's not quite gone over the line, and it's the small margins, the penalty miss from Mahrez, the Mane shot that's not quite got over the line. But I think, you know, those two games, it's very interesting to look at those and think, had they finished differently, would the season have finished differently, perhaps?
Possibly.
It's impossible to say, isn't it?
That's it. And you don't know whether there would have been other games where City sort of stumbled over the line, where actually they might have won by clearer margins. But you don't talk about those because they've gone on to win the league. And that's the difficulty of being in that situation. I think February was a particularly pivotal month, wasn't it? Obviously, Liverpool picked up two draws against West Ham and Leicester in quick succession. And you would have expected them to win. I think the West Ham game was a 1-1 draw. They were away. It was Monday night football. Yeah. And they struggled to deal with the pressure a little bit at that point. And they then drew with Manchester United and Everton. And to draw those two games, I think, probably affected them psychologically. Against their two closest rivals, to not pick up the 3 points, the fans started to get a little bit worried, because they were aware that City could quite easily go on a really, really strong run towards the end of the season.
It was very much after that, though, that it was tight for the rest of the season, wasn't it? You know, it's kind of 2 or 3 months where they were both just winning every single game. You know, they were scraping the wins as well. Liverpool had to get back on it, and you think back to the Fulham away win where Milner scores the late penalty, and you know, Manchester City have just been absolutely relentless. And I think the 1-0 victory over Spurs after losing the Champions League was, that could have
massive.
That could have tipped them over the edge if psychologically again.
Yeah.
They've lost to them in Champions League. It will be a gutting blow. As we said right at the start, they were definitely looking to get the Champions League under their belt this year. So I think that was absolutely huge. And I think overall, you know, we've got to the end of the season, and you just have to give credit to both clubs, because it was kind of who was going to blink, and neither did. And I think, you know, we go back to the psychology of it. Manchester City know what they're doing now. You know, they've done it a lot over the last 10 years. Liverpool, it's been a monkey on their back for 30 years now.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they could have crumbled and stuttered, and they didn't.
No, and people have talked about, did they bottle it? I don't think that's really up for debate, because, as you said, if they'd have had this points tally for any of the other Premier League seasons, there would have only been two or three where they would have finished behind the leaders. So it's obviously a season that Liverpool fans will now hope can finish in real excitement with a Champions League victory, but they deserve immense credit for where they've got to this season. It's just a shame that they had to take so many of the Southampton squad together.
Not bitter, though, are you?
Absolutely not, no.
Right, well, that's all for the top two. Join us after this short break, where we're going to get to the rest of them behind.
Twice a team has lost one game and they've won the league. Jose Mourinho's Chelsea in 04-05, and Tony, your Arsenal only lost one game in 91.
And I was in Chelmsford prison, so I didn't lose that one. I was invincible that year.
Yeah, you were.
Welcome back to part two of the Sweeper podcast, and we're going to have a look at the rest of the top six and also Europe as well. But let's continue with the Premier League first. We'll discuss what we witnessed last week in Europe after. But the third best side in the Premier League, Chelsea?
Yeah, I mean, the table doesn't lie, but
how does this happen?
But the table does lie, because they're not the third best side in the country, are they? That's clearly Tottenham, and I don't know what Tottenham decided to do, but it was very...
What were they all doing at the end of the season?
Yeah.
Because nobody wanted it, did they?
No. I think it was a case of after you, and nobody really took...
Everyone was being very polite and kind, weren't they?
And then Sarri just stepped in, chewing fags and pushing his players over the line, and yeah, they finished third. And
I bet he just pushed players as well, didn't he?
Yeah, and I bet his breath stinks as well. But you look at Chelsea, and obviously... Sarri's come in for a lot of criticism over the season. Some of it has been deserved, some of it probably hasn't. He's got them to a League Cup final, which they lost on penalties when their goalkeeper had a bit of a meltdown, and they finished third in the Premier League and they're in a Europa League final. So we talked about whether it was a disappointing season for City. What do you class this as from a Chelsea point of view?
It's a successful season, I think. You know, a season of transition again. It seems to happen to Chelsea every 2 or 3 years, and I think probably the disappointing thing will be, and you know, this is ultimately what the fans would say as well, is that there's not really a defined style of play. It's not very exciting. I think there's obviously a lot of issues off the pitch with the transfer ban and with the fact that nobody does like the manager. They are going to lose their best player, which is massive, especially when you can't bring anyone in to replace them. So I think I would imagine that the fans are find it difficult to look past all the positives at the moment because of what's going to happen going forward. But ultimately, you look at it on paper, as you've just said, third place League Cup loss and a Europa League final. It's a decent season, and I think they'd have taken that at the start of the season, and that's probably the most frustrating thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to sort of go over your point regarding Eden Hazard again, because you're going to lose somebody who's got 15 assists this season and 16 goals.
Yep.
So you take away 31 goals basically from your team, and how do you replace that when you have got a transfer ban? Don't get me wrong, the likes of Callum Hudson-Odoi may get an opportunity, but he's really untested when it comes to the Premier League. Ruben Loftus-Cheek's shown that he can chip in. Gonzalo Higuain's been a massive flop since he's come to them, and obviously I don't know how it stands with that. I don't know whether they are able to extend that, given that it was agreed before this transfer ban came in.
I think they can have him next season if they want him, and you'd argue that they kind of just need him to make the numbers up. They've also got Pulisic coming in from Dortmund.
Of course they have. But is he going to be the sort of player, given how little football he's played for Dortmund this season, is he going to be able to come over and fill those massive boots?
Well, that's it. I mean, how do you replace Hazard? He's arguably in the top five players in the world at the moment, and you know, he's almost irreplaceable, and you know, the style of play potentially has to change for the whole team just by taking one person out as well. It's going to be very interesting because they are forced into certain things that they wouldn't normally do. So the ones you've just mentioned, you've got, you know, someone like Mason Mount coming back in potentially from Derby, who's been good in the Championship this season. He's probably not set the world alight, but they're going to have to give these players a go. It's as simple as that. And I think, you know, on that basis, it's going to be interesting because they may actually find a way to adapt the whole team to suit some of these players. So someone like Hudson-Odoi could come in and tear it up next season. Equally, who's going to be the manager? Who's going to be making those decisions? Does Sarri stick to his principles, or does he change everything in line with what they've got?
Who knows? I think we need to move on, don't we? To Tottenham. We've obviously mentioned them a couple of times already, but what a bizarre season it's been for Spurs. I mean, would you class it as Spursy, or is that now all hidden behind the fact they've got to a Champions League final?
I think it is still quite Spursy. I think you can afford them this, though. As you say, you know, they've got to a Champions League final and they're in the top four again. Ask at the start of the season what you want.
Not signed any players for the last three transfer windows.
No,
anyone's mentioned that.
I think the thing for them as well is, and I think again, would you take signing a few players and lose the manager, or would you rather kick the manager and not sign anyone? It looks as though Pochettino is likely to stay. There's murmurings that he might not.
I would absolutely love it if, I mean, I wouldn't, I don't really know who I want to win the Champions League less, but I think it would be hilarious if he won the Champions League with Tottenham and just walked out. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the fact that he said that to reporters, where do you go from winning the Champions League? It would be the most Tottenham thing ever if they were to do that and then lose the best manager they've ever had.
Isn't it? Yeah. So, but, you know, they're in the new stadium. I can't believe we're saying that at the end of the season, as if it's only just happened. It has only just happened. It's ridiculous. We talked about the start of the season saying, yeah, they might have to play 3 or 4 games at Wembley. They've played 3 league games there, I think. It's ridiculous. So, but they're in there. It's a new horizon. It's all to look forward to. They have got a Champions League final to look forward to. I can't even remember the last time they won any silverware, let alone, well, you know, a Champions League is completely different. But
the League Cup, they might have got a League 2011
maybe, because I think they were winning every one with a 1 in the year. So if we base it on that, it's kind of 8 years ago, and now they're potentially they're 1 game away from winning the Champions League. So I think you have to credit them, because they have got a small squad. They've had some key injuries at key times as well. The fact that Vincent Janssen's still there and coming on, you know, people genuinely, when they saw him come on in the Champions League, thought, I thought he'd gone. You know, people would genuinely question that. Exactly. So, I think it was in the league, actually. But I think, you know, on that basis, they've got a very, very weak squad. So they potentially have to go and do some business, and they may be able to go and do some business now as well. They've got the reputation of the Champions League final that they're in, potentially winning that. They've got the stadium. Hopefully the manager sticks around for them as well. And they've got a really good basis to build from now, and it's kind of been coming for the last few years, but there's so many things that never quite, just the piece of the jigsaw never quite fit in, and they're getting nearer to that now, I think.
Doing it all without Harry Kane as well, which is interesting. It'd be very, very interesting to see whether he starts that Champions League final. The sprint onto the pitch at the end of the semi-final was one that probably didn't please the medical staff too much, but it looks like he might be okay for that.
But that's it, 3 weeks between the games as well. You know, that's a significant amount of time for anyone, and if he was near enough there, then obviously that should work in his favour. And obviously from an England perspective, it'd be great for him to get a game before he powers us to a Nations League victory.
Absolutely. We need to also, in fact, I was going to say we need to go to North London, we need to stay in North London, because Arsenal have made another European final, their first for a long, long time, and naturally they'll be bitterly disappointed not to get into the top four, but they've now got an opportunity to get in there on the back of a potential Europa League win.
Yeah, and the Champions League qualification is a must for them. Ultimately, I'd say it's probably their only goal this season, having missed out on it before, and acknowledging there is a huge, huge transition process that they have to go through following Wenger's exit last year. And you know, I think they have made progress this year, probably not a huge amount of progress, but ultimately if they end up in the Champions League as a result of a victory in the Europa League final, which is going to be tough, you know, not make no bones about it, it will be tough, that's a very good season, and it's definite progress. I think the strikers they've got are top quality. I think the defence is improving, you know, marginally, there is improvement there. And again, with Champions League qualification comes attraction to players. You know, they've got a better chance of bringing players in. I've said it before, they have absolutely everything in place to be a superpower in football in terms of location, facilities, name and history. You know, ultimately they have it all. But they need to be in a position to be able to attract people there to go and play where they want to play. And they have that ability now. They are losing Aaron Ramsey, which still baffles me. He's been fantastic since he's announced that he's been leaving. It's a big shame that he had to cut his season short as well. But potentially they get the opportunity to replace him.
Yeah, I think that they'll probably have a little bit more money to spend. I think I was listening to Five Live the night before last, and Mark Chapman had somebody on who said that Arsenal's budget will be $40 million for the summer, and they're basically looking to strengthen at centre half and a box to box midfielder to replace Ramsey. Well, you could have saved that money and just given him a new 2-year extension.
$40 million is not a lot, though, is it?
It's not massive, but I think when you consider the amount that they've spent on the likes of Mesut Ozil, and let's be honest, it's not really worked out. I think when you're spending that much money on somebody, then you expect them to be producing higher numbers than he has done. And that's been Arsenal's issue in the past, is that when they have spent big, it's not really worked out. And it's probably time now to look at players who you can pay $20 million for, and they can come in and exceed expectations. I think that's what the Premier League needs to try and do again is try and go back to basics when it comes to scouting. There are excellent players out there. You just need to go out and find them rather than just throwing money and hoping that it's going to stick. But I think that Arsenal, for them, like you say, they'll see it as a successful season. I think we need to talk about another club who won't, however.
I would say the main reason we've had gaps from recording this podcast is so that people can forget that we ever said anything positive about Manchester United. Because they have been absolute dog shit over the last few weeks. And it was all set up for them. They could have qualified for the Champions League. And that would have been huge for them. There would have been a bright future. Or, you know, short-term future would have been bright. In the Champions League, Solskjaer's there, everyone's happy again. No one's happy, they're not in the Champions League, and they're a shambles from top to bottom.
Yeah, and it just becomes so much harder, doesn't it? The fact that you're unable to offer players Champions League football when you're looking at your recruitment, and their summer targets will think twice about going there. And we've seen it before where people have ended up last minute joining another club. And
all they've got now is the name. They've got their name and that's it. Because you look at everything... You know, commercially, they will always be brilliant. But again, that's based on their name. Eventually, that will wane if they keep going backwards. And as it stands now, they look in the worst shape I've known Manchester United in my football watching life. And I think on that basis, it's worrying. I think there needs to be wholesale changes throughout. I mean, it's even been suggested that Solskjaer could lose his job already. And... I don't know whether that's the right or the wrong thing. I genuinely don't. I'd like to say morally it's the wrong thing, but actually on reflection, perhaps that is the answer if they can get someone in. I don't know.
Yeah, it's possible. I think that what Manchester United need to do is they need to probably look at clubs elsewhere who've gone through similar periods of not winning titles. So maybe look at somebody like Atletico Madrid in Spain, who for years on end didn't really get involved in any sort of title challenge. And I know that they're not as big a club as Manchester United are, but you would argue that they were kind of floundering around the positions that Manchester United have found themselves in recent seasons, and they found a way to take that club forward, and they managed to do it by investing in a particular philosophy and priding themselves on defensive football. And I think what Manchester United fans need to realise is that Fergie era of attacking football and having these players who could go out and score 4 or 5 goals each game and concede very few, it's over now. So rather than comparing every single team that you have to that great team that won title after title and showed so much in Europe, you need to understand that these things do work in phases. Look at Liverpool. They've not won a league title in England for 30 years. Mm. So for Manchester United, it's been 6 seasons, and for those fans, that will be a long time for them. But what they have to understand is if they're not careful and they try to continue this sort of busted flush approach, which is bring people in because they know how the club works, then it's not going to continue. So go on.
Where are the failings then?
I think the failings are to do with the recruitment, but I think that it's also to do with the recruitment of managers. You look at the people that they've brought in. They've brought David Moyes in. They've brought Louis van Gaal in. They've brought, obviously, Solskjaer in. And
Mourinho.
I know that Mourinho has won titles previously, but they've not got anyone who's at the top of their game. And I think you look at City, you look at Guardiola, he'd won wherever he'd been, and he was coming off the back of winning titles. You look at Klopp, probably wasn't in that sort of position, but Liverpool were willing to give him the time to mould that side and do what he was able to do. For me, Manchester United need to have an approach which is going to suit the club top down, and at the moment they don't have that. There's a massive disconnect between where they are commercially and what happens off the pitch, which is very, very strong, like you've already mentioned. Recruitment-wise, they need to get somebody in who's going to take charge of how that works, and they need to look at people who've had success elsewhere. I don't think that somebody like Paul Mitchell, who's currently at Leipzig in Germany, would be a bad shout, because the way that he set scouting alight when he was at Southampton, and then he moved on to Tottenham and did a great job there, and then he went to Leipzig. And I think the Manchester United just need a different approach. They need a fresh approach, and rather than harking back to the great times in the 90s and the early 2000s, it's time for a complete reshuffle, and it might take a couple of seasons to get things right. I think Manchester United could spend £150 million in the summer and get nowhere near the top two again next season.
I mean, the chances are if they spend £150 million, it's not going to be very well spent, is it?
No.
And that's probably the key to it.
And that's the difficulty. And I know that they only finished 5 points off the top four, but when you consider how far those top two were clear of everybody else,
yep,
that doesn't really tell the full story.
It's 30-odd points, isn't it?
Of course it is.
It's 10 wins away from...
I honestly don't think Solskjaer will be the manager there on January the 1st, 2020. I don't think he'll last the first 3 months of the season.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, we'll talk about our predictions for next year. But I think, interestingly, Manchester United won't be involved in this conversation, whereas the five that we've already spoke about, to a certain extent, will be. Liverpool have got through in the Champions League, sorry. And that was thanks to a ridiculous comeback against Barcelona.
I don't think anyone ever considered it was going to happen. I spoke to my dad the day of the game and he said, "Are you going to watch it tonight?" And I said, "Well, no, it's a dead rubber. There's no real reason to watch it. I think that Liverpool may win, but the most they're going to win by is probably one or two goals. Barcelona are going to score, so that leaves them needing to score five goals at home, which isn't going to happen." So I... fortunately backed down on that. Once I had a look at my phone after about 10 minutes of the game and they were obviously already 1-0 up, Origi had scored, and I thought, actually, it's probably worth just sticking it on. And am I glad I did, because I don't think that we'll ever see that Barcelona team so comfortable in the first leg. And I know that obviously a similar thing happened with Roma last season, but not to the extent that it did in this game. Nobody gave Liverpool a chance at all, and to do it against such a dominant force of European football is massive for that, yeah, football club. And you saw the reaction of the fans to it. It was almost disbelief, but they just are unbeatable at Anfield in the Champions League. They're just so good.
I had a great experience watching it. I was in a hotel in London, and when the fourth went in, which was the Alexander Arnold corner, either room, either side of me, three of us in unison cheered.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm not a massive Liverpool fan at all. I will support anyone in Europe though, and you could hear us all like just a yelp.
That's funny.
And then as the final whistle went, I heard a scream go past the door. Someone had run up and down the corridor. Just hear it coming in and out. It's like something out of Simpsons or something. But yeah, and that's what football's all about, isn't it? You know, it was remarkable, and it did. That and the next game that we'll talk about kind of reminds you why you love this ridiculous game that you can't predict.
Absolutely right. And like you say, we'll move on to the Tottenham game. A
bigger comeback? A more surprising comeback?
That's why I stopped myself, because I was going to say the biggest comeback last week, but it's difficult to say that. I think probably bigger, because they essentially scored with one of the last kicks of the game. I think to do that, it makes it all the more special. And also, they only had 45 minutes to do it, because at half-time, they were completely dead and buried.
I've got another story about how I was watching that one.
Was it in a hotel?
So I was in bed, and I was trying to be very quiet, because my girlfriend was trying to sleep. And obviously, I wasn't expecting that to happen. I think there was a header that went over the bar with like a minute to go, and thought,
I think,
right,
it was the Tongan one,
yeah.
Yeah.
Thought, that's it. And I tried to do a very quiet celebration, and twatted my elbow off the table, so I'd give myself like a dead arm, and I was like, ah! And she turned around and said, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "I suppose I scored." But it was so exciting though, and
it was.
We've now got Liverpool and Spurs in the Champions League final, and to know that there's an English club that will definitely win it, the fashion they got through, I think the final will be a really good game. You know, they both desperately, desperately want to win it. Spurs kind of don't have anything to lose with it to a certain extent, which I think makes it interesting. I think Liverpool are favourites, and I think the onus is on them to go and win it.
Oh, absolutely,
given the history they've got in the competition,
yeah,
and their experience. But I mean, for me, I think I would like Spurs to win it. I think it'd be a great story, considering where they've come from, just purely looking at the competition this year, where they've come from. They've gone past Manchester City in there as well, who are arguably the best team in there based on domestic form.
Yeah.
That comeback, the fact they've done it with both games, there was players missing as well, and I think it'd just be a magnificent story. And to see Pochettino's emotion after the game as well, that was genuine, heartfelt emotion, and I want to, you know, I want to see him go and win it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the majority of neutrals probably do want to see Tottenham win it, and that will obviously get Liverpool fans goats.
For the record, I'm genuinely not bothered though. Just one of them winning it is amazing.
But you'd like Tottenham more than Liverpool. Yeah, and I think that's where most people will sit with it, other than probably Manchester United and Everton fans who will be absolutely desperate for Spurs to win it, and obviously Arsenal fans will be absolutely desperate for Liverpool to win it. I think that, like you say, to have those two teams in the final gives everyone in England something to look forward to, because the Champions League final is brilliant, but sometimes when it's two non-English clubs, then it doesn't mean as much. It's not as exciting to watch, and the fact that we've obviously got two teams in the Europa League final as well just shows the strength of English football in Europe, and it statistically has never been as good as it is at the moment. I know obviously we had Chelsea and Manchester United in the final over in Moscow, and it has happened before, but we've never had it where all four of those European places have been taken up by English sides.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Arsenal-Chelsea. Arsenal beat Valencia comfortably as well. I think it was quite an odd one, really, wasn't it? Particularly when we'd seen what had happened in the Champions League as well, to think that they almost coasted through. And you know, very impressive. And we kind of said at the start of the season, through various points of the season, that Emery is a specialist in this. He knows exactly how to go and win this competition. And I think it's going to be very interesting against Chelsea, who scraped through. You would have thought they'd have had the more comfortable journey, really, against Eintracht Frankfurt. But to go through on penalties was ace. I love penalties. I've got a lot of time for penalties.
More of that.
But I think it'll be very interesting, because it won't really be like a Europa League final that Emery's necessarily had before. I don't know whether the approach is the same. Is it more like a domestic game?
See, I've got a feeling that the Liverpool-Tottenham game will be an absolute classic, because those two teams will
just go for
suit
it,
each other. I think Tottenham play a little bit more with the handbrake on than Liverpool do, certainly. But I just feel that Arsenal-Chelsea might be a bit of a ball fest. I think both sides will understand that. I mean, Chelsea obviously don't have Champions League qualification hanging on it, and they've won European trophies recently, whereas Arsenal, it hasn't happened for a long time. So I just hope that doesn't spoil it as a spectacle, because the second half of that Chelsea-Frankfurt game, the second leg, was absolutely woeful. The extra time was nearly as bad.
Oh, it was awful.
I think that if that game is as bad as that second half was, they should just cut the losses and just go straight to penalties. Just get rid of extra time. Nobody cares about it.
Well, obviously, penalties, there'll be a big involvement from Petr Cech against former club, the current club, and obviously his last ever game as
Narrative well. Central, Hazard's probably last game for Chelsea. The way that he waved goodbye to their fans after the game away at Leicester on the weekend just showed that he's packing his bags as well. So what greater way than to leave the club with a European trophy?
We love football, and we love the Championship, which is where we're going after this break.
It promises to be another special Champions League evening, and here to enjoy it all with us are Rio Ferdinand, Steven Gerrard and Ian Wright. All three have had their hands on this trophy, Rio and Steven in Moscow and Istanbul respectively. And Ian, when he walked into the studio this evening... I've been looking forward to that all day.
You should have said when I walked into the studio and grabbed the back of your head.
great.
Welcome back to part three of the Sweep podcast, and we are taking that trip to the Championship. And before I get into the really exciting stuff, let's go in order, because I think that's the fairest thing to do. Norwich City, champions, and fully deserved ones too. Play some fantastic football, great young core of a squad, and top scorer in the league as well, Timo Pukki, I think is a fan favourite from Michael Hull.
Yeah, I really like him because he doesn't look like a footballer. He looks like, and I've said it before, he looks like a market salesman. Somebody who's calling out all the apples and the strawberries, as they often do down at Leeds Market. And I, for one, think he'll massively struggle in the Premier League next season.
I was just about to ask how you think he'd get on. I think he's maybe got 10 goals in him.
Really?
Yep.
I mean, if he gets 10 goals in the Premier League next season, then that's a successful season for anyone who's coming up from the Championship. But I just feel like he's not going to have played against that calibre of forward before, and that's where he might struggle, but hopefully he proves me wrong.
Well, you know, Norwich, club with fantastic tradition. It's going to be interesting to see how they approach next season, given the, you know, that relative inexperience in the squad as a whole, the style of football they play. I'd probably compare them to when Brighton came up, and you know, they tried to stick to their principles a little bit and got some relative success. Obviously, we've seen how that's kind of worked out in the end. But,
yeah.
You know, I did also say that they were the best footballing side I'd seen in the Championship this season. Said the same about Fulham last season, and we've all seen how that's gone as well. So I think it will be very interesting to see how they approach it. I think in Daniel Farke, they've got someone who doesn't have that experience as well. So it's a big journey for all of them to take, and it's another huge journey for Sheffield United to take. And returning to the big time, they pipped Leeds at the post following an impressive end to the season. An amazing achievement for a club who I'd say many would have had down for mid-table at best, but to see the likes of Billy Sharp and Chris Wilder take their club up to the big time has been a joy to watch, I'd say.
Yeah, I'm delighted for Billy Sharp. He was instrumental in the very short time that he spent at Southampton in getting us over the line into the Premier League, and he then didn't get his chance. He was farmed out on loan and then eventually left on a permanent deal. But to do it with their hometown club, so obviously Chris Wilder's a massive Sheffield United fan, and Billy Sharp's been at the club for years and years and years as both a fan and a player. So I really hope that they do well next season. I think that they will have to spend money, because on the face of it, the squad that they've got probably isn't Premier League worthy. But you look at what Fulham did last season, and by disassembling that jigsaw that had been built up in such a successful Championship campaign, that was ultimately what cost them.
Yeah, but you know, the club have got experience. You know, they are passionate. The fans are so passionate there, and there will be a real grit and determination. They'll make Bramall Lane a fortress as well. It's a really good place to go and watch football. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to having them there. I think, you know, they are a big club in the grand scheme of things as well, and I think they deserve it. And I mentioned Leeds before, they dropped off massively towards the end of the season, even tried to cheat their way into a victory against Villa as well. as disappointed we didn't get the opportunity to discuss that away.
I love how that was, what, 3 weeks ago now, yeah. And you've still managed to get it in there.
it was madness though, wasn't it? We watched it together after a stag do as well, so there was confusion.
Emotions,
in the air anyway.
Emotions,
yeah.
Were running low, let's say.
We had no idea what happened, but you know, if you don't know, it's they didn't put the ball out and went on to score. And fortunately, Marcelo Bielsa, a great guy, but they're in the playoffs. Started with a 1-0 win in the first leg at Derby, who took the last place on the final day of the season. And it's a good first season in management, Frank Lampard. I think, you know, regardless whether they go up or not, they've done well in the cup competitions. They've played some great football. They've lost, I think, 8-0 to Villa on aggregate over the two games. But ultimately, he's done a very good job in that first season where he could have easily faltered.
Yeah, and I think that he's been somebody who was probably given a little bit of stick at the start of the season because of the fact that he was kind of giving it on a silver spoon, wasn't he? Whereas others have probably had to work a little bit more for the opportunity. But I want to get your prediction ahead of the game tonight, because obviously it's the second leg of Leeds Derby, and There's a lot of needle going into this game, and a couple of Leeds fans that we spoke to over the last couple of weeks have said that they think that Derby will knock them out, and it will all be sort of around what happened with Spygate, and that will be their opportunity to get their revenge. So I want you to talk me through what you think is going to happen tonight.
I don't think Leeds will win tonight. I don't know whether that means it's going to be a draw or whether Derby will win. I think it will be very close, and Derby don't really have a lot to lose, so I think they have to just go for it. And you know, I think there's probably more pressure on Leeds as well, and you know, we've seen Leeds falter in the past. And I was in town earlier, or in the shopping centre near Elland Road actually. There's so many Leeds fans around already with their shirts on. There's so much excitement, and you worry about Leeds because of how they have been, and you know, this is a huge opportunity for them. But I think if anyone's going to balls it up, it's possibly going to be them.
I mean, it's a beautiful day in Leeds today, isn't it? It's very hot and sunny. There will have been a lot of alcohol drunk in the run-up to tonight's game, so I'm going to make a prediction that we might see a bit of crowd trouble.
Really?
Not between the fans.
There's just a little bit of animosity
there.
I've got
an idea there might be... I can just see somebody trying to get on the pitch or something like that, and it's not what you want to see in a Championship playoff final, but the stakes are so high for that football club, and obviously we both lived in the city for a long time now, and it does bring a completely different buzz when you've got Premier League football here, and I obviously hope that Villa go up, but it will be intriguing to see the way that Leeds deal with a day out at Wembley if they do get there, because they've had some horrendous defeats in playoff finals as well. They obviously got beat by Watford, got beat by Doncaster as well at one stage, I think. So they need to try and exercise those demons, but you'd imagine that a team that will come on to talk about in a little while will probably have the upper hand given the fact that they were there last year.
I mean, typically Leeds will go up because I've just moved out of the city for the first time in kind of 13, 14 years. I've been desperate for them to be in the Premier League while I've lived here. So typically they will go up, but let's hope not, because if they do, it means that it's at the detriment of Aston Villa. We won.
You did, mate.
We won.
You made hard work of it, though,
didn't you? Yeah, we did. So we qualified in the playoffs with West Brom. We came from 1-0 down on Saturday at home to win 2-1, and lost 1-0 last night, so it's 2-all on aggregate, but won on penalties, and it was a tough old game. West Brom were a lot brighter than we were. I think we really struggled in the first hour of both games, to be honest. And I think the sendings off in both games of Dwight Gale and Chris Brunt, respectively, were the big differences, the key moments, I think.
Yeah, respectively has probably never been used in such an inappropriate manner, but obviously grammatically correct.
Yeah.
But the lack of respect that those two showed for their own football clubs. And
well, I mean, Chris Brunt possibly lost the tie for them.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, he's the kind of biggest servant of that club, and I think, you know, he'll be very disappointed when it's sunk in today. But we won on penalties, and I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we probably deserve it. We've been fantastic the last few months, and I know that's difficult to be able to say about your own team, but I think even as a neutral I would be saying similar things. We won 10 on the bounce, only drew with Leeds after they cheated, we lost to Norwich in the last game after the playoffs were confirmed as well, and we've got a really, really good opportunity now. As you said, the experience of going there last year, I think there's a real a really good spirit within the club at the moment as well, having a hometown. But, you know, similar to Sheffield United in Billy Sharp and Chris Wilder, we've got Dean Smith at the helm, we've got Jack Grealish, who's dragging us through games at times.
The honorary Brummie John Terry.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think we've got it all kind of going our way, which kind of means it's set up for a massive fall. But I feel like we've got two bad performances out of the way, and we've still managed to get through, and potentially that puts us in a really good position to know that we can only get better for the final as well.
Absolutely right, and I think that we need to look elsewhere in the Championship table. Obviously we focused a lot on the top six, but there was other things that happened, and that included some rather big clubs going down.
Yeah, unfortunately we lost three sides to relegation. We lost
Was my favourite off the pitch video of the season. It's better than the ones at the start of the season where he was doing the translation. Better than the Spygate one where he basically
can't guarantee it won't be a soundbite as well.
It was incredible. The fact that he's been in the country for, what, probably about 10 months now and can't pronounce one of the sides that he's playing against.
Ipswich.
It's not
difficult. Have won European competition.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're not... It's not like a local town somewhere.
No.
You know, it's Ipswich. But anyway, the Tractor Boys have been down since about November. Bolton gone into absolute meltdown with the club on the brink of ceasing to exist thanks to being run into the ground. Players have been on strike because of not being paid. A game was cancelled as well at the end of the season. It's like Sunday afternoon football or something.
The latest thing on Bolton, and it really is tragic, and we're not making light of this at all, but the club have had to set up a food bank for its employees who are unable to afford to eat because of the fact that the wages aren't being paid. So how a club in the second tier of a country which has so much money when it comes to football is ridiculous. There should be something that's put aside for clubs
who get into this
sort of mess. And ultimately, the employees aren't the ones at fault here. It's the people at the top of the tree. So fingers crossed, Bolton can get themselves sorted.
Did
as
you
soon
see
as possible.
That an unnamed /Preston sent some food vouchers for the staff as well?
No, I didn't see that.
Sent a couple of grand's worth of food vouchers, which was a, you know, they didn't have to do that. Obviously, they're in a fairly similar area of the country.
Yeah.
And you know, just a fantastic gesture from another club. And again, all the other clubs have got money as well. You know, they should be getting together really, but it should be down to the governing bodies, and you know, the Football League have a lot to answer for, as do the FA and the Premier League as well. But that's another story. I think, you know, we have to look elsewhere. Fingers crossed they can survive as a football institution. But it took until the last couple of games for Rotherham to go down. They battled hard, couldn't get past Millwall, who just about survived. along with Reading, QPR, Wigan and Birmingham City following their points deduction.
Got that in there, didn't you?
Yeah. Above them, we've got to mention Stoke City.
The favourites for the championship.
Did anyone
this
see them finishing 16th with the squad they had? They only won 11 games, and I think only the relegated clubs and maybe two others above them won less games, which is utter madness. Drawing 22
games.
Yeah,
I was going to say, that's the story, isn't it? If you draw 22 games, even if you turn 10 of those into wins, then you're going to be in playoff contention.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But to be down in 16th is... It's going to be a big summer for Stoke because they've got some players on big contracts who they really need to get out the door. Nathan Jones has obviously not really had an opportunity to put his stamp on things just yet, and he'll obviously be coming up against his old club next season as well.
Other notable performances, Sheffield Wednesday managed to propel themselves to mid-table under Steve Bruce. Swansea in Graham Potter's first season finished 10th, which has earned him plaudits and meant that he's been linked to other jobs already. More on that later. Bristol City, superb earlier in the season. A winning run of, I think, 9 games at one point. They just missed out in the playoffs. As did Middlesbrough, who were far less impressive. I think were it not for a flurry of late wins for them, they could have easily been much lower down. And this huge question mark, spoke to a couple of Borough fans recently, question marks over Tony Pulis and whether there's going to be changes at the club.
I think it's inevitable. I don't think Steve Gibson will settle for too long back down there in the Championship. As soon as those parachute payments stop, it makes it twice as hard to get up there. So they need to try and ensure that they maintain some of that money and probably put it in the hands of somebody who's a bit more capable.
And we'll be looking at the rest of the playoffs in the next few weeks for sure. And, you know, come on Villa.
Absolutely.
Come on,
I think,
Villa.
Every single pod listener will get behind Aston Villa, Mitch, other than those Leeds fans, Derby fans and Birmingham City fans.
Absolutely. Should we just have a very quick trip to Portugal?
I think we're going to. We need to round things up because obviously quite a lot's happened since we last spoke. We've been covering sport in Lisbon for a lot of the season, as you will well know if you're a regular listener to the pod. Now, Sporting have got one league game left. They play against Porto, and that's this Saturday. Once all that is over, they have something else to look forward to, which is the Taça de Portugal. And the final of that will take place on the 25th of May. So it will be Sporting against Porto, as we've already mentioned. A massive game, an opportunity to do the domestic cup double for the Lions. And they've had a very successful month or so, really. They've only picked up one draw in the last 5 games, winning the other 4. And they beat Belenenses 8-1 a few weeks ago. So, in fact, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was. And naturally, out of this decent season, because they're not going to make the top two, they're pretty much secure in third, there's been some real standout performers, one of which we've talked about a lot over the season, and that's Bruno Fernandes, somebody who's been linked with Manchester City a lot. Also Manchester United, and I know that you've heard over the last couple of days that he might not be going to the Etihad, that he might end up elsewhere. But a player who's at the top of a lot of clubs' lists to try and bring in, he's scored 32 goals, registered 17 assists in all competition this season, and obviously he was named Player of the Season in the Liga NOS over in Portugal, which is no mean feat when you consider that he's playing for a side who will finish third. So he should be on everybody's radars, and I would imagine that we probably will see him in the Premier League next season.
We'll see him before then, because we'll see him in the Nations League as well.
Of course we will.
From what I can gather, Portugal are pinning quite a lot of their hopes on him. I think he's a similar age to Bernardo Silva. I think they came through the youth levels together, and I think there's a huge expectation for the two of them to shine and kind of be the supporting cast for what, you know, is going to be one of Ronaldo's kind of final farewells.
Got a bit of a Frank Ribery look about him as well. He looks like a Portuguese Ribery.
No one wants that, do they?
No. No, you're right. Nobody wants that. But footballing ability-wise, he certainly will hope to get up to the stakes that Ribery once reached.
Lovely old job. Well, join us after the break, where we're going to get into the rest of the Premier League, the mid-table, the also-rans, and they're not quite survivors. Join us then.
Para el partido de Ipswich. Me doy por derrotado.
Okay, I give up.
Welcome back to what seems like the 15th part of this week's Sweeper podcast, but we've got to cover the bottom half of the Premier League, because that's where some of the jewels in the crown sit. Where would you like to start, Mitch?
Well, let's work our way down. So let's go from 7th. Wolves, the battle for 7th, as we've obviously watched keenly all season. Great value this season, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Very impressive first season. I suppose the question now is, can they continue to build, or is that the kind of ceiling for Wolves? And they need a little bit more squad depth. I think they went through the first 15 or so games of the season without really changing the lineup, and you could argue that maybe cost them towards the end of the season. They lost games against teams that you wouldn't expect them to. So if Nuno can tighten up against the sides in the sort of bottom six, then you never know. They could break into that top four next season.
The value has been those performances. As we mentioned earlier on in the show, the performances against some of the big teams, you know, they are upsetters, you could call them. And I think if they can, as you say, if they can learn to win against the teams around them and teams below them, then they've got a decent chance to progress. And, you know, they've got a great defence and a great solid base, and so definitely individuals to pick out, in particularly in their first season in the league. You look at someone like Jean Moutinho and Rui Patricio, two experienced players who you could definitely put question marks against them at the start of the season, whether they were coming over kind of for the right reasons and whether they could impress in this league. But I think they've proved everyone either wrong or right, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, and they've obviously Wolves have moved quickly, haven't they, to secure the signing of Raul Jimenez for an absolute bucket full of dosh, and you would argue that the way that he had an impact over the majority of the season would be very impressive. Obviously he didn't start off like a house on fire, but his total of Premier League goals, I think he probably got around 12 or 13, which for anyone coming up into the Premier League for the first season, still relatively young as well, is a really decent return.
And there's very little between chasing pack in Everton, Leicester, West Ham and Watford. And are Everton flattered by an 8th place finish? I know I've been touted as a bit of an Everton hater. And I've said before, I get very frustrated with Everton because they should be better. But I do actually think they probably are flattered by an 8th place finish.
Yeah, I think that obviously Watford dropped off a little bit towards the end of the season, and Leicester didn't really fulfil their potential because of what happened earlier on in the season. So Everton kind of sneaked in there, and I personally think that you have to look at it as a positive season. Look at where they were a couple of years ago under Sam Allardyce, barely sort of avoiding relegation, and then the stability that it's brought by having a season under a manager who hasn't been linked with the exit is obviously a good thing.
A surprise for him.
And I know obviously there were a few murmurs of Marco Silva leaving, but I think they've made the right decision by sticking with him, and hopefully they'll get more out of him. If the season had started in sort of March, then Everton would have been in the top four. So you can't argue with the fact that they've got the potential to do well at that football club. What they have to do is do it across a full season. I don't think that the squad they've got there is good enough to finish top six, and I think we need to just mention that Yerry Mina has been as bad as you thought he would be.
Yeah, Richarlison,
13 league goals.
I'm not entirely sure he has proved me wrong, to be honest. But
13 league goals is a great return, but I think the problem is he scored a few of those towards the end of the season when it didn't really matter, and he did have a little bit of a dip in form. He started off very well and then sort of tailed off. But if you're paying $55 million for somebody, do you expect a little bit more than that?
I don't think his all-round game has necessarily aided Everton this season.
Still very young, though.
He is very young, and we'll see how he progresses. I still don't necessarily think he's going to become a £55 million player at any point of his career, but we shall see.
And on that, I think before we do the last pod of the season, whenever that might be, depending on what happens in the playoffs and the Champions League and that sort of thing, we need to just check whether Eddie Lee did ever pay that money to Chris Platt, who obviously ran the London Marathon.
We will assume he did.
If he didn't, then
if he didn't, he's heartless.
As bad as your opinion of his football team.
Yeah, Everton can go to hell. Anyway, Leicester, intriguing ones under Rodgers. They look a little bit exciting. You know, they could be the ones to push on with a few signings, perhaps. Tielemans would be the one to start with. He's been excellent since he's come in, and I think considering what happened off the pitch earlier on in the season, in such tragic circumstances, I think they've got to be happy with the season, and I think there is a cause for optimism.
Yeah, 100%. I think that we've said it a lot, Brendan Rodgers and Leicester fits like a glove, and I think he needs to try not to use them as a stepping stone. I think that he should try and set out a bit of a 2 or 3 year plan there and bring in young players and work with the ones that he's got. They will naturally have to at some stage change the way that they play, because a lot of the players that they've had there over the last couple of seasons will be coming towards the sort of end of the shelf life. They've obviously got rid of players like Okazaki and Danny Simpson, two players who played for them during the title win, and Wes Morgan's not getting any younger. I think the most important thing from Leicester's point of view is that they build on the good start that they've made under Rodgers, and they try and bring in players who he sees will fit that football club, rather than some of the signings that he made at Liverpool, who you would argue probably didn't fit the club, and they were just bought because of the names that sort of came with them. So I think Leicester, like you say, to be able to finish people talking about footballing reasons will be absolutely everything for that football club, and you can't underestimate how much of an impact their chairman's death has had on the football club overall. So fingers crossed for a better season on and off the pitch for them next year.
West Ham have kind of flown under the radar a little bit this season. Suspect they probably would have taken that, though. I think Pellegrini's done a great job in just steadying the ship, getting the fans back on side. You know, the signings he's made have impressed, especially Felipe Anderson.
Now, I'm not going to talk about Felipe Anderson because I'm not that impressed with him. I think he's been all right. I think he's chipped in here and there, scored a few goals against Southampton, which is very easy to do. And I would expect more from somebody who costs that much money. I think he might have that opportunity, because by all accounts Marco Arnautović might be out the door in the summer, and if he is, then you'd expect Anderson to be given maybe a little bit more of a central role.
That's it. I think there will be a saga this summer.
They love a saga.
Yeah,
they love a saga.
Even if nothing's going on, I'm sure they'll create a saga. But as long as he's not locked up again like he was for that video where they got him hostage.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, they do have a lot of quality in that squad. I mean, for me, the standout for them this season has been Declan Rice. I've mentioned it a few times. He's come on leaps and bounds. He will probably be in the England squads for the Nations League games. Possibly even will have a starting berth.
Declan Rice, who I was talking to somebody about West Ham the other day, and he was a self-proclaimed West Ham fan, referred to Declan Rice as Damien Rice. So make of that what you will.
Well, maybe his career will go down like a cannonball. Watford will be disappointed to top the bottom half. Another solid season, of course. An FA Cup final to look forward to. If they win in Europe as well. If they qualified, it would actually mean that Manchester United would have to play in the qualifiers. The first qualifiers on the 25th of July. They've already got a game that day, a friendly against Spurs in China.
I was going to say, I thought it was in Asia.
Be interesting, but you
send
can't
out the kids.
Yeah, you can't take anything away from Watford, though, can you? They've been brilliant in a season of kind of stability from their perspective, but a little bit of inconsistency that's probably not aided their progress to a certain extent.
I think you've summed it up brilliantly. I just want to say something about Javi Gracia. He is one of the most likable chaps in
English football.
He's
a lovely man.
He just seems to go about his business in the right way with a smile on his face. And the fact that he's managed to get them into 11th, and obviously they've spent the majority of the season much higher than that, and to an FA Cup final is massive for that football club. And you just hope that they give City a really good game on Saturday and the occasion doesn't get to them.
Absolutely. Well, below Watford, we're starting to look down now. You've got those that finished comfortably, although 14th place Bournemouth, you would argue, were comfortable all the way through, and then just a really, really bad end to the season.
It's not like Bournemouth, is it?
Well, no, but you know, I think they'll be disappointed, right? Because they were one of the sides that looked like, you know, they could push on.
Yeah, they obviously struggle for consistency, Bournemouth. I think that's been their problem throughout the Premier League tenure so far, and that's what Eddie Howe will need to build on. It's going to be an interesting one for them, because this is the first summer where a lot of their players will be linked with moves away. I think they've always done well to hang on to those players because they have gone under the radar.
Like they just shut the shutters down, isn't
yeah,
it?
But this season it was almost like they'd booked the holidays a little bit too early, and they'd kind of taken their foot off when there was still a little bit to play for. So it will be interesting to see whether they can hold on to the likes of Nathan Ake, Ryan Fraser, David Brooks, Callum Wilson. Yeah. And that will be the difficulty for a club who has a decent amount of money off the pitch, but the reason for that is that they've not spent it on anything else. As soon as they start work on a new training ground or a new stadium, the money for players will go out the window, and it wouldn't surprise me to see them cash in on some of the prize assets.
Palace and Newcastle over the moon about their positions, you'd think. If Crystal Palace could win at home in the style they did on the last day of the season, beating Bournemouth 5-3 on a more regular basis, they'd be absolutely laughing. But I think, again, similar to Bournemouth, I think this summer is crucial for them in keeping, you know, two or three players at the club to progress and build on.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be another interesting one. obviously Will Sahar has been linked with a move away, and the Palace fans won't want that to happen, but if it continues to sort of cloud the transfer windows for them, then it might be better just to cut the losses, get rid of him and bring somebody else in. You'd imagine he'd probably go for a fair whack as well.
Yeah.
But for him, he needs to make sure that he makes the right decision, because we saw his career go off the tracks when he went to Manchester United. So I know he's been linked a lot with Borussia Dortmund, and it would be interesting to see how he would get on in a league like that.
And then Newcastle, I mean, the biggest question ever is will Mike Ashley and or Rafa Benitez be there come the start of the season? It looks as though they're going to get Rondon in permanently next season, which will be a bonus, because he's been fantastic this season, particularly recently. But you still don't really know what they've got in the locker over and above that in terms of business and strengthening the squad.
We have the same conversations at the end of every season.
Is
Rafa going to be there? Is Ashley going to be there? It's getting a little bit boring. But Newcastle deserve a lot of credit for the performances that they put in post-Christmas. That home victory against Manchester City will probably be the highlight of their season. And like you say, they've got somebody who can lead the line in Rondon, and obviously Iosi Perez has shown that he's got a decent eye for goal in the last few games. So it could be an exciting one for Newcastle. I think defensively they will continue to have issues, and a lot of that will be based around whether they can hold on to the manager or not.
And then we go to the survivors. Burnley finished 15th, which, great achievement really, given where they were around Christmas. They couldn't buy a win, but the form in the second half of the season was more in line with their form last season, when obviously they qualified for Europe. Tom Heaton coming back was a turning point, and it's utter madness really that one player could transform a team, or seemingly transform a team, especially a goalkeeper as well.
But it's pivotal, isn't it? The issue with Burnley was they were shipping goals left, right and centre. They had no consistency, and by bringing arguably one of the best goalkeepers that England has got at the moment, it's going to solidify things.
Did you see who player of the year was? And player's player?
Joe Hart?
Nope.
Ashley Westwood.
I've been banging his drum for years, and finally it's been appreciated somewhere. Anyway, Southampton, I've not written any notes. You've survived.
We have survived.
That's the key thing here. I texted the other day, I said there was definitely a reason to be optimistic going forward. Yes, you've survived. It's in the past. I think there is a dawning of a new era at Southampton that hasn't really been on the horizon for the kind of last 3 years or so.
No, and I think the difficulty is that at some point selling the best players that you produce for decent money and then not reinvesting it properly in the playing squad is gonna bite you in the arse. And it's been a while since we've had a really good footballer at the club now, and obviously losing Dusan Tadic last season wasn't the worst thing in the world, because he didn't perform particularly well, but then he goes to somewhere like Ajax and shows the potential that he had. And that's the difficulty as a Southampton fan. There's always excitement at the start of the season, because we finished sixth 3 or 4 years ago. Three seasons ago, we finished sixth in the Premier League, and then the last two seasons we've been battling for our lives against relegation. So I think that the fans will have some sort of optimism at the start of next season. Obviously, Ralf Hasenhüttl's come in. He's done a brilliant job to get us over the line. I think that we've kind of lost our way a little bit in recent weeks, but you could put that down to the amount of work that the players have done in the previous sort of 3 or 4 months. And the thing that Southampton need to do this summer is have a big clear out. There are far too many players there who don't belong at that football club anymore, and it's needed a strong personality to go up to go in there and tear up a few contracts, get rid of a few players, show them that their future lies away from the club, and actually invest the money that we're able to get in properly. The signing of Mohamed El Yunusi, who we spent about $16 million on, has proven to be an absolute disaster, and that's where we need to get away from. We can't go in for these untried players in the hope that they will turn into fantastic footballers anymore. We're going to have to probably look at the Championship and leagues that we know players can come in and play at the level that we need them to, and it will be a big summer, because I don't think there will be a huge amount to spend, and the majority of the transfer funds, like I say, will be generated from player sales again. But hopefully it won't be our best players leaving us. It'll be the likes of Charlie Austin and Shane Long.
Another seaside club struggling, Brighton. Survived in the penultimate week of the season. Stuttered over the line to get there. And fortunately, as a result, Chris Hughton's been sacked. What are our thoughts on that?
It's tough. It's obviously tough, because when he took over at Brighton, they were down towards the bottom of the Championship. They'd had that horrendous spell under Sammy Hippier. And Chris Hughton went
Sammy Hippier. I don't know,
forgotten all about him.
Jesus Christ.
And obviously Chris Hughton went in there and did a great job, because not only did he keep them from going down, he was able to bring them up about 18 months later. And from then getting them into the Premier League, he's kept their heads above water. And he is a defensive manager. He doesn't play attacking football, so they're not going to get that sense of enjoyment from it. Is that a reason to sack him? Possibly not. I think a lot's gone wrong with the recruitment at Brighton. You look at the amount of money that they've spent over the last couple of transfer windows, and they've been big spenders. They've spent as much as pretty much anyone in the bottom half. They've spent big. We've seen the likes of Lacadia come in. I think he was about £20 million, and Johan Bash has been pretty dreadful. I think he was about £17 million. Yves Bissouma was a decent enough signer. I think he's done okay towards the end of the season, but recruitment at Brighton hasn't been great. And I think if you're spending that much money on players, you expect a bit more of a better return. So Tony Bloom's made a massive decision. It could backfire. Obviously, we've seen clubs do it in the bottom half of the Premier League and then get relegated pretty quickly afterwards. So I suppose it's going to tell its tale next season. And I personally think Brighton will struggle. I think it looks as though they want Graham Potter to come in to replace Hughton. And is that an upgrade? Somebody with no Premier League experience, somebody with one season of experience in English football? It's difficult to say. But I think the Brighton fans will be pretty pleased that this chapter of football this season in particular is now at a close.
It is an opportunity for a fresh start, but I do think they have a fairly average squad. I've said for the last few months that I really fear for them, and I'm surprised they didn't go down. More on that in a second. But you know, they've been poor throughout the season, really. You know, there's more of a possibility of them losing good players than kind of bringing in players of that same quality. You know, someone like Lewis Dunk could get snapped up. You know, Arsenal potentially could be crying out for someone like that, you know, a Dunk, yeah, or a Tarkowski or someone like that, you know. And I think if they were to lose those quality players, at some point you will lose the goals of Glenn Murray as well, and they've been so over reliant on that. And yeah, I think it's an opportunity for a fresh start. It's slightly harsh on Chris Hughton, because I don't think it's necessarily all his fault, but you know, unfortunately football, that's the way the cookie crumbles, isn't it? The relegated three, Cardiff City, to think they would have been favourites to go down probably first this season. You know, they surprised us all, I'd say, that they've been good value without being spectacular. 34 points is not a great tally, and really that last day win probably doesn't come against anyone else. So 31 points is what they possibly would have had, but a win's a win. The bottom three, I believe, a cumulative total of points is the lowest it's ever been, which, considering Derby got 11 points or whatever it was all them years ago, is pretty piss poor all round. And you know, Cardiff, they won more games than Southampton and Brighton. Neil Warnock, love him or hate him, it has been entertaining. I don't think we'll ever see him in the Premier League again.
I certainly hope
not as well. And like Leicester, you look at the tragic events that have taken place off the field for them. Massive credit has to be given to them with their fight to stay up, and that is actually without that striker they were looking for as well.
And Cardiff fans have said a lot this season that they don't like the Premier League. Neil Warnock said that he doesn't like the Premier League. So for them, it's probably not the worst thing in the world to go back down to the Championship, where they probably enjoy the football a little bit more. They've obviously been on the wrong side of quite a few refereeing decisions, but it is what it is in that division. And unfortunately, if you don't get enough points, then you only have yourselves to blame. They had enough opportunities to win games, and you just look back at that Palace game. If they'd have won that, then gone and won at Manchester United last game, yep, of the season, then it would have been Brighton who would have gone down. So it was in their hands for a long time as well. So I think that from Warnock's point of view, as much as he brings entertainment to the Premier League, I think it's just a level above him, and I don't think tactically he's able to cope with the quality that belongs in that division. And I think Cardiff fans would probably agree with that. It looks like he's going to stay there next season, but I don't think he'll be bringing them back up.
They gave it their all. Let's move on to Fulham. What a mess. Given the money that was spent and the way they played last year in the Championship, there was rightly some genuine excitement, but I think there was some scepticism as well.
I'll stick my hand up on this one. I said that I thought Fulham would finish above Wolves during our start of the season predictions, because I thought they'd spent really well in the summer.
It's not a huge surprise. Looking back at it in hindsight, it's not a huge surprise. Does anyone come out of it with any credit? There's not been any individuals that have really stood out. Scott Parker's now been given the job full time, which I think is good to see another, you know, good footballer of that generation of good footballing minds, I guess. You know, given the opportunity at a big club. And I think it's going to be very testing times for them. They've got a lot of players there on a lot of money, and I'm not sure how much would have been written into the contracts about them getting relegated. I don't think there was really a that much of a thought that they would get relegated. So it's going to be interesting to see how they can manage that, because I can guarantee that most of them won't want to be dropping down a level either.
Well, no, when you think that John Michael Seri was linked with Barcelona and next season they'll be lining up at Barnsley, it's quite a fall from grace for some of those players.
Have you ever been to Barnsley?
I've been to Barnsley so many times, and it's don't get me wrong, it's a lovely place.
It's not Barcelona though, is it?
But it's not Barcelona. I think we need to move on to the final placed Terriers, don't we? A bit of a nightmare for the pod, because as much as second team should never exist, I think we probably adopted them as the collective for the podcast when they came up from the Championship, and it's been great having them in the Premier League, but it's probably not a surprise that their time in the top division has come to an end.
No, they punched above their weight to get there in the first place, really, you'd say. And yeah, what a journey it's been over the last couple of years. I doubt there's a single Huddersfield fan who's kind of angry at what's happened. Disappointed, yes. But as we've said, the money they have now and will continue to get as a result will keep them in the upper echelons of the second tier for years to come. You think you don't think it would be mismanaged? Obviously, there's been a change at the top and possibly the right time as well. I think, you know, Dean Hoyle has to be given the hugest amount of credit. He's done such an amazing job, but he's also selling it to a lifelong fan as well, you know, selling it to the right person. In theory, we've seen these things go wrong, but you would like to think that this football club has been run in the right way. They've got such a solid foundation in terms of the finances, the experience of this. They will have fans on side in whatever league they're in as well. You know, they will back the team through whatever happens.
Absolutely, and I think from their point of view, they just need to make sure that as you say, they're able to solidify in the Championship next season and then go again. And to be pushing at the top end of the Championship is beyond what those fans would have expected a few seasons ago. So to have a couple of seasons at the top table will mean more to them than you could ever imagine.
Do you know what I've got for you now, Michael? That's not in the running order.
Oh, God, no.
Our predictions from the start of the season.
Oh,
we need to close this off, so very, very quickly, I'll whiz through these for you.
I can guarantee that if you've gone back and listened to these, you will have only picked out the ones that I've got wrong.
No, every single prediction's in there. So
right,
top
on.
Four. We both had the same four teams. You picked the order, and I didn't commit to the order.
Right.
City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Spurs. You got bang on.
Oh, well, that's... And you didn't commit.
Well, that
to
was
it.
The order I read them out. So I guess subconsciously I wrote them in that order.
Okay.
But I didn't commit to it, and you said, "Well, I'm going with that one."
Right.
So well
four
done
out
you.
Of four.
Yeah, well done you. Bottom three, slightly different. So we both had the same teams again, and I did an order this time. Cardiff last, Newcastle and Bournemouth, and you
so
went
you got one
for
out
Cardiff,
of three.
Bournemouth, and Newcastle. Yeah.
Oh right.
So
both got one out of three.
Both got one out of three. Player of the year, I went with Kevin De Bruyne.
He was injured for a lot of it, wasn't he?
You went with Sane, Leroy Sane.
Again, didn't get a huge amount of time on the pitch. So,
but I think they were fair shouts at the start of the season. Young player of the year, Michael Hole, went with Dele Alli.
Yeah, again, not a terrible shout. He's not had a horrendous season, but I think that had I realised that Raheem Sterling still qualified for the young player of the year, then I may well have gone for him.
I said two, had to decide on one. They were both around how much they were going to play. Ended up with Gabriel Jesus, who's barely had a sniff,
yeah,
and been shite when he has played.
Yeah.
And I had Naby Keita as well.
Well done.
Who, yeah. Manager of the year, I went with Jurgen Klopp. You went with Pep.
Okay.
I don't know whether it has been awarded.
Yeah, has Pep got it?
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I think they've both done alright this season, haven't they,
yeah,
really? Surprise package, you mentioned it before, you went with Fulham.
Yeah.
You said good transfer business, and also they've got Jukanovic.
And that lasted for about, what, 2 months?
I went with Wolves. I said they'd have a top half finish comfortably and challenge the Europa League.
Didn't really push yourself there, did you?
No, but I at least said they'd challenge the Europa League
as
well.
Bet,
so.
Yeah.
First manager to go, do you remember who you said?
Mark Hughes?
Harry Grazia.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I went with the club, well. And they were desperately trying to get rid of him the whole time anyway.
Early doors.
I'm not sure who. It's probably Jokanovic, wasn't it? First to go.
Yeah, it would have been.
Who will go furthest in Europe? Michael Hole, Manchester City.
Oof, that was good, wasn't it? Given that everyone else is still in.
And
other than United.
I didn't just give a prediction of who it would be. I said they'd go and win it. Liverpool.
Oh, you said Liverpool?
Yeah. And you called it a bold statement. I said they'll go one further. One further. They've got a chance.
Yep.
Who will win the FA Cup? I went with Arsenal. You went with Chelsea to retain it.
Okay.
Let's move on. Championship, you said in no order, Derby, Villa and Leeds.
Who are all still
all
in with
the playoffs. I said Villa and Derby.
Who was your third, Mitch?
Someone else.
Was it Stoke?
It was.
16th.
Stoke. What a bag of shite. Top scorer, you went with Harry Kane. And had it not been for injuries,
he would have absolutely hammered it.
I went with Aubameyang.
Very good from you.
Yes.
Joint top with young Mo and Sadio.
Most assists, we both went with Kevin De Bruyne.
And he was injured.
Biggest flop.
Yeah, so, I went for Felipe Anderson. We've already established that. Who was yours?
I said Fred.
And you've been pretty much bang on.
I obviously banged the Richarlison drum as well. And said... if he does sign for Manchester United, Yerry Mina, because at that point we thought so.
Yeah.
And he was also dog pops for Everton.
Continually.
So, I'd say Fred and Mina out of the three. I'll take that. And the final question was, who will employ Sam Allardyce?
Oh, and he's...
No one.
He's still down the job centre, isn't he? Every week, picking up his gyro.
I said Cardiff in November. Warnock will be gone by November. Still there.
Who did I go with?
You said that quite a lot would have to happen for him to be there. And a lot of that would be Mike Ashley leaving Newcastle. Things going down the pan there.
Yeah.
And him going to Newcastle. So, yeah. Very
prediction
mixed
game.
Very
started
mixed
strong.
Prediction.
Tailed off towards the end there.
But, yeah, I think we've done all right, to be honest.
We'll do it again next season. It'll be better, I'm sure.
It will. But that's all. That's all for the football. Join us after the break where... We're going to give you an update on the Fantasy Premier League, which I think we're both very excited about.
I think one of us is very excited about. Welcome back to the final part of this domestic sweeper podcast. Now, before we get to the quiz, which is obviously what you've all tuned in for all season because it's the pinnacle of what we do, we need to talk about Fantasy Premier League. And my co-host, currently sat opposite me, is fidgeting in excitement. He's rubbing the back of... He's doing a Guardiola. You know when Guardiola rubs his face during an interview? You can see that he's about to get a little bit excited, as I say, be proud of his boys, and I think I'm probably going to open the floor up to him because I can't take it anymore.
There's a worthy winner of the competition, let's say that. The total of 2,363 points. Amper Dubit Society have won the league, and it was me.
It was you, and despite my pleas with the rest of the upper echelons of the Sweeper Podcast League, nobody has managed to topple Mitch from his position as top dog. It looked on a couple of weeks ago when Frank-Louis Priard's bipolar FPL disorder got... I think they were within 2 points, weren't they, going into the last round of fixtures?
Yeah, I think he may have even got past me at some point as well.
And then you just showed your class, didn't you, on the final day?
It's been a very much a Manchester City-Liverpool title race between the two of us, but... You know, big credit to Frank, but you've won fuck all, mate. Mike's de 433 just missed out on a European place in 7th.
Yeah.
A total of 2,213. But crucially, that is 150 points behind me in the race for the host.
It's a massive gap, and you and I have a little bet, don't we, every season? And for the last two seasons, you've wiped the floor with me, really. I've got absolutely nowhere near you. So... something's going to have to change next season. I need to maybe, I don't know, sabotage your app, because I think that's the only way forward, really.
I feel like I put a lot of time and effort into it as well.
But it shows. I mean, you were up there in terms of, like, the...
I think I've ended up about 16,000th.
And when you consider there's millions of people,
I think
that
there's
play
about
the
5 million, yeah, which I'll take.
Pretty impressive.
It's in the top 1%, I think. So yeah, I'll take that. It's been a roller coaster. I think it's fair to say Salah got the most points. I had him in for 0 game weeks, interestingly, not a single game week. But I did have Eden Hazard, Sterling, and Mane, who were all behind him in the midfielders. And then Robertson and Van Dijk as the top scoring defenders, just 4 points apart, with Aubameyang beating Aguero as the top striker. 2 top keepers were only 7 points apart as well, Alisson taking the crown over Edison.
The thing that won you this competition this season is the fact that you had Andrew Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold in from the start.
And Alisson.
And, but more those two, because not only were they keeping clean sheets, they were getting loads and loads of assists and chipped in with the odd goal as well. So I think that we will obviously internally award the prize to you and hope that next season everybody else can come back stronger.
Yeah, I mean, I need a challenge, so by all means, get involved, people. One thing I'm not doing so well at is the quiz. We have 2 competitions between us. I have destroyed you in one, and you are destroying me, and likely will destroy me with the final standings as well. But that is the quiz. As Mike said, that's why you're here. The current scores are 32-24, with, I'd say, 3 to play in terms of this episode, and a couple more as well to see the season out. Michael's asking the questions. Can I close the gap? The big question marks over whether I can.
Yeah, well, I've given you a couple of opportunities at big points this week. So my advice would be, don't go in like a bull in a china shop and see the headlines and think that you could get a ridiculous amount of points. Play it a little bit safer. But I agree, you're probably just going to go completely off piste, aren't you? Right, so we're going to kick off. And I must admit, the theme of this week's quiz is the Premier League season as a whole. There's a few other questions, but that's kind of what we're covering. And if anyone has seen or heard any of these questions elsewhere, it is purely coincidental and nothing to do with a particular popular broadsheet newspaper's website that may have published a season review quiz earlier in the week. So let's hope Mitch didn't do that, because if
didn't,
he did,
categorically,
then I'm in trouble. So we're going to start off on the Blockbusters theme with H. H is for Harvey, not that one. Harvey Elliott became the youngest player in Premier League history this season when he came on for Fulham. But whose record did he break?
Oh, God.
This player... In fact, I'm not going to give you that clue. I was about to give you a big clue there, but I'm not going to give you a clue, because you should know it.
I don't know it, I don't think.
Right, I'll give you the clue then. He's currently playing in the 8th tier of English football, and I think he's only in his mid-20s.
That doesn't surprise me. Did you say how old he was?
16 when he made his debut.
No, I genuinely don't know.
It was Matthew Briggs, who also played for Fulham. One of those where, obviously, if you know it, you know it, and if you don't, you don't. So, let's move quickly on. E is for England. Who was the highest scoring Englishman in the Premier League this season?
Oh, good question. I will go with... Could he still have been... Between 3 people.
Go on, who are your 3? Name me your 3 and I'll tell you.
Oh, hang on a minute. Oh no, now it's between 4. it was between Kane, Murray and Vardy, but I've just thought of Raheem Sterling as well.
I'll just give you a clue. Glenn Murray is absolutely nowhere near.
Right, okay. I'll go with Sterling. Sod it.
It's not. Is somebody that you mentioned, though?
Is it Vardy?
It's Jamie Vardy, yeah. Jamie Vardy finished on 18, Harry Kane on 17, and Raheem Sterling on 17
as
well.
Had I not thought of Sterling, then I would have said Vardy.
Would
That's
you?
Annoying.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda. So, this is probably your hardest question.
right,
and I'll stick it in before I give you the opportunity at big points. D is for David De Gea. Straightforward, how many clean sheets did old unsafe hands have this season?
Ooh. Not many at all.
So I think Edison was top on 21.
Yeah.
Allison was top on 21, and then Edison, I think, got 20. So that kind of shows you what the top guys got.
I think he would have only got... I'm going to go with 5.
You're not far off. It was a couple more. It was 7.
Right.
But yeah, it's a decent guess. So, now we're moving into familiar territory for you, Mitch. G is for goals. Name the top 5 scorers in the championship, but they have to be in order. 1 point per question, but if you get one wrong, then you lose the lot. Now, you don't have to do all 5. If you want to just do the top 2, you can have 2 points. If you want to do the top 4, you can have 4 points. But they have to be in order. So if you get one that's out, then you lose the lot.
I'm pretty confident on 3.
Okay. So
I think I might have 4.
Is that what you're going to go for? You're going to go for 4?
Nah. Or are you going to go for 5?
I need the points. I'm going for 4.
You're
going
to go for 4.
I'm going for 4. So they have to be in order. The top one's dead easy.
Timu Pukki.
Is correct.
Who's Tammy Abraham.
Two? Tammy Abraham's number 2.
Neil Morpie's
number 3.
Oh, shit. And I think he's going to be either 4 or 5. I'm going to go with Billy Sharp.
Right.
As number 4.
That's wrong, Mitch.
Bollocks.
Billy Sharp's number 5.
Ha ha ha.
Who would you have gone for in the next one then? This player scored 24 goals in 40 appearances.
24 goals.
I'll put you out of your misery. It's Dwight Gayle.
Ah.
So yeah, top 5 were Timu Pukki, Tammy Abraham, Neil Morpie, Dwight Gayle, and then Billy Sharp.
That's annoying, isn't it?
It is, but you gave it a bloody good go.
I did.
And your last one.
Hopefully this is worth about 20 points.
6 points.
Right.
But again, if you get any wrong... then you lose all your points. Okay.
One then.
So, one. Are you sure? Relatively straightforward question. In the Premier League, there are 6 clubs who have birds on their crest. You get one for each, but if you get one wrong, then you lose the lot. So how many of the 6 do you think you can tell me?
If I had some time, I think I'd be fairly confident on getting 6.
But we haven't got time. No, we've already been there for about 2 hours. He's currently counting on his fingers.
I feel like I've just forgotten one. I'll go with 4.
Go with 4?
I'll go with 4.
It's big. All right.
Palace.
Is correct.
Cardiff.
Is correct.
Spurs.
Is correct.
Liverpool.
Is correct. So that's 4 points, Mitch.
The
2 that you missed, both finished very close to one another in the table, separated by 2 places, both in the bottom half. Neither went down. One of them's quite easy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
When you think of their nickname, the other one not.
Ah, so Newcastle.
No.
Really?
No,
right.
There's no magpie in the Newcastle badge. No, right. It was Brighton, the Seagulls, and Burnley. And I don't know what bird that is. Burnley fans get
it'd be an awful bird. It'd be a horrible bird.
It looks like a duck,
I mean,
maybe.
I've seen a lot of birds from Burnley, and they are minging.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, I'll take 4. It should have been 7.
You could have,
as a minimum there.
You could have been in the lead. What does that do to the overall
standings? It takes me to 28. So 32-28. So we've got 2 to play. 4 between us. Could have closed that gap to 1 then. That's very frustrating.
But when you consider you're about 13 points behind earlier in the season,
yeah,
you're doing
all right. I mean, I kind of changed the game so I could get more points. Anyway, it's been a pleasure to be back. Get in touch with us. It would be great to hear from you. Get us on Twitter at The Sweep Pod, Instagram and Facebook. Search The Sweep Podcast. Email us at thesweeppodcast@gmail.com. Get us on iTunes, Spotify, wherever. Thanks for sticking with us. It's been an epic episode today, but it's been enjoyable. Plenty to get stuck into,
and still a lot to discuss between now and when the final curtain falls on the European season and also the domestic season outside the Premier League. So hopefully you'll be able to join us for a roundup of those.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much, Michael.
Goodbye.
Sayonara.